Welcome to the Month 10 Investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of October 2022 to the 31st of October 2022. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names and that owe money to the supplier. If we are providing finance to that supplier, we call that supplier an originator. We call that supplier an originator because they originate the commercial transaction that creates the ETR that Credit Exchange buys from them on the day it is issued, and this helps improve the cash flow for that supplier or originator. We call this cash flow support trade finance. So at last month's briefing, I addressed the issue that we have caused some confusion among our investor base with how ETR are generated for Investable through the use of trade finance and asset finance. As agreed at the last briefing, I would spend time each month to go over this to hopefully continue to clear up any of this confusion caused. Firstly, let me begin by explaining that what we are doing today is still the same trading that we've been doing for the past 10 years. And we understand that our recent website and brochure revamp has caused this confusion. Anyway, we believe it's important that you understand it's still business as usual with Investable. And by that, I mean that if you look at how we generated ETR back in 2013 and compared it to the ETR we buy today, the only difference is the improved quality of the debtor or the payer of the invoice. Today, as with back then, more than 90% of our income is still derived from the same simple transaction where an originator is issuing an ETR and credit buys it at a discount. No change there whatsoever. And we haven't changed or moved away from our AIG insurance either. Yet, with all our reserves on hand, back in June, we asked what you all thought of discontinuing this, but the general reaction was to keep it. And we will. When it comes up for renewal in 2023, it will be renewed as always. So like I said, no change whatsoever. Now, what has changed over the last 10 years and has improved even more so in the past 3 years is the quality of the easy ETR and the significant reduction in these risk profiles. And the simple reason for that is because while Patrick and the board have been busy seeking to find better and stronger ETR, we never took the time to explain this and the reasons behind it. Last month, I discussed the introduction of shipping into our briefings and how we believe we caused the confusion with this. But if you remember, we see a ship as a floating company, and we treat this company the same way we treat all of the other companies we deal with who are based in offices around the globe. But with ships, they have customers who hire the ship to transport these very valuable cargoes on board, and before these cargoes can be unloaded in ports, credit must be paid for its outstanding ETR. This means there is a priority to pay us so we can release these cargoes as we effectively hold a charge over them. This is an example of our asset finance ETR we are generating. This month, I want to go through a trade finance example and explain how these can be varied. An example of this, or a current transaction in negotiations, is for the transport of organic palm oil. Palm oil is among the world's most versatile raw materials and is the largest oil used by consumers worldwide. Roughly, or circa 80 million tons of palm oil is consumed each year. 40% of this is used for cooking in Asian countries like Indonesia and China, while the other 60% of palm oil is used in manufacturing of bread, pastries, cereal, peanut butter, chocolate, and margarine, and can even be found in ice cream. It is an essential ingredient in detergents, personal products such as shampoo, soaps, cosmetics, cleaning products, and other household products. It is also used as a biofuel in biodiesel. Given its large-scale consumption, the palm oil business is a very big business. And because the oil comes from palm trees, it's produced in the tropical rainforest parts of the world where environmental concerns are largely ignored. So what was supposed to be an environmental friendly alternative to the carbon-based oils has resulted in the New York Times, which cites as an environmental nightmare, where thousands of hectares of rainforest are being irreparably destroyed every year as more and more palm oil is produced by unscrupulous harvesters in places like Borneo, where Indonesia does little to curb the devastating destruction of their own lands. There is, however, a very important distinction between organic palm oil and non-organic palm oil. Of the 80 million metric tons harvested each year, less than 150,000 of it is organic palm oil. Organic palm oil is produced using a set of environmental and social criteria which companies must comply with in order to label their products as certified sustainable palm oil. In compliance with the ESG policy of the credit group, it is this certified sustainable palm oil that we are supporting. The farming, the production, the harvesting and transport of into Europe. This organic sustainable organic palm oil is harvested in multiple countries around the world. But the originator we are seeking to support obtains the majority of their supply from Sierra Leone. This organic palm oil is then shipped globally to locations in particular being the Netherlands and Germany. This prospective originator has one debtor who in Germany who is buying over 33% of their product. This particular transaction involves credit financing a large order for the potential originator to grow their future orders. The hope would be that this initial facility could grow them from hundreds of thousands into the millions. With this product being sold throughout Europe, payments from the debtors would be paid directly into the credit bank account, with credit being in control of the receiving funds. With credit financing this, we would add organic palm oil to another item of the list we have financed. This type of transaction, as mentioned, is known as trade finance and is the natural evolution of the original invoice financing we operated at for so many years, as we are still paying the invoice on day one and getting settled on day 76. This, along with asset finance, or more specifically in recent times, ship or shipping, is where Patrick and the board have successfully led the company to finding higher quality and value for ETR, all the while keeping or reducing the risk profile. Now, moving to some other types of finance credit exchange will provide, you'll see on the Investable website and the new brochure, it's asset finance. As explained here, credit do buy vessels, and they're mostly offshore vessels. As you see, when we buy one of these ships, we will only ever pay 50% of the purchase payment price, and the spawning owner pays the other 50%, which means we own 100% of an asset, but we only paid 50% of its sales price or what it's worth. If you think about that and go back to the financial crisis in 2008, if all the banks were only exposed to 50% of the properties they owned, most of these banks would have been in good shape, because back then, the property market, or more correctly, the properties, did collapse in value and lose up to 50% of their value before they even started to recover. Albeit highly unlikely, as it was back then, if the value of ships collapses at 50%, we're well covered. But more importantly, the fact we own 100% of the vessel and the spawning owner paid 50% of it, they all know they must repay us on time and every time, or they will lose whatever value they have tied up in that vessel. Also, as the brochure explains, not only do we own the vessel outright, we also control all of its income too. What this means is that as this vessel is being paid by the companies that are chartering it, all that income is paid directly into the credit bank account. On average, these vessels have income each month that is 5 and 10 times the monthly repayment amount. All that income comes to credit. We then deduct the monthly payment and send the balance back out to our originator. All in all, a very strong solution for financing ships and making absolutely sure we get them paid in full every month, all of the time. And that's it, really. We have asset finance and trade finance, and that is what Investable ETR are. So we're either paying up 80% on day one and getting settled on day 76, as you can see from the credit index, or we're getting paid monthly from the income the assets are earning. And that's why we like the fact, because we focused on these solid trades with strong security and incentives to pay, we are buying better and stronger ETR today than we were 3 or even 10 years ago. So that's it. ETR are either part of an asset finance transaction or they're part of a commercial trade finance transaction. This leads us nicely to the first figure on the briefing for the month of October, where it shows that on the 31st of October 2022, we held 89.12 million euro worth of RSA. So an RSA can be described as a bucket of ETR. RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreements. So the figure showing that we had over 89.12 million euro worth of RSA at the end of October means all our originators are contractually committed to supplying us with another 89 million euro worth of ETR in addition to what we already hold. And then the second briefing, the second figure in the briefing document of 74.34 million is what we have fully allocated or was actually in the market at the end of October. But going back to the 89.12 million euro worth of RSA, this is the second month in a row of an increase back to the normal levels after August's shock of 41.97 million euro. So why is there such drastic changes in the value between months for our RSA? Well, as some of you may know from prior briefings, the board took the decision back in 2019 to become more specialized in what credit exchange does. Rather than being a jack of all trades and a master of none, we decided the future of Investable ETR was being the best we can be in a selection of specialized industry sectors. This way, we can always ensure our ETR provide the best and safest returns that your investors demand. As you heard earlier, that means the best and safest returns from trade finance and asset finance. Since 2019, and over that time, even though trade finance remains 90% of the income each month or year, as we brought in more assets into credit exchange, 50% of our balance sheet is now made up of hard assets. So going back to that extreme fluctuation in the RSA figures, that is because until last September, at these briefings and indeed in the briefing document itself, we haven't been including future income from asset repayments we have yet to receive. So the drop in RSA value to 41.97 million euro was because it did not include the outstanding asset income. And as the end of August this year, that stood just over 34 million euro. So if you take the 41.97 million and you add another 34 million to it, we're back at almost 76 million euro. Though, as per the briefing document, I am happy to be telling you today that we are past the 89 million euro mark. And as explained at September's briefing last month, meaning the September's briefing document and presentation, the briefing document will include the future income from assets on our books from now on. One final word on the split in our business between asset finance and trade finance, where we've chosen to specialize in industry sectors like energy, mining, shipping, and trade. It's important that I point out that we may have chosen to specialize these sectors. And as you can see in the Nestlé case, marketing doesn't really fit into these specialist categories. And that's because we have 10 years experience in the broader market. And although we continue to focus on specific sectors and types of trade, we still know how to trade strong transactions from household name debtors when the opportunity presents itself. Moving on from what credit exchange does and how originators create the ETR from the trade finance and asset finance that ultimately make up Investable ETR, I've already mentioned the 74.34 million euro of investor funds which were fully allocated, meaning ETR we already own. When you add the 89.12 million worth of RSA, that amounts to a total of ETR value, both present and future, of this amounts to over 160 million euro in assets and trades we have on our books at the end of October. This figure has continued to rise each month and shows strong and stable growth as we put more money into the market. Moving to the investor redemptions, there was a further increase on September's number to roughly 1.57 million euro in October. Hopefully this is a trend and does not continue past the turn of the year. As you all know, the originator demand for asset finance and trade finance has never been stronger. Therefore, we need to keep as much investors' funds as we can. And it also explains why we're out in the market raising additional investor funds too. Now, if we turn to look at the Baltic Index, which is the index against which most shipping contracts are linked, there has been a change of fortunes once again, with the upward trend of September and the beginning of October turning into another sharp decline at the end of the month. It ended October at 1,363 on the 31st of October. This is just the latest in a turbulent few months for the Baltic Index, as it has had steep declines and inclines recently. None more so than when it hit a two-year low of 962 on the last day of August. This new decline is due to the pressures created in capesize and supermax segments. Both these ship categories are struggling for demand at the moment, but thankfully, our vessels are in the Handymax and Panamax sectors. So our demand is still strong, but we would still like to see the Baltic Index to increase and try to reach the levels seen earlier this year and previous. On this day last year, 22nd of November 2021, the index was 3,065, while it is only 1,177 as of today. Overall, it has been an up and down year for the index. We hope the tide will turn, and in 2023, we can see the levels rise again. The dry bulk Panamax has fallen also this month. It is around $13,250 per day at the moment, while it was roughly around $17,500 at the last briefing. What this means is that ship owners and charterers, who are our originators, are not getting as much as they would have previously. I did mention at the last briefing that prices on the FFA markets did look a little less stable throughout next year, and I was right with my prediction, with future prices falling further to just below $11,000 in January 2023, with prices holding around the $12,000 per day for the next couple of quarters. This does seem to be some stability for the upcoming quarters in the dry bulk sector, albeit at a lower price. With stability being something all industries crave at the moment, as we continue to head into inflationary risk and recession becoming even more evident. Last month, I spoke about the UK being on course for a recession, and the news hasn't changed, with results confirming the UK economy contracted by 0.2% in Q3 of this year. Now, as the official definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth, the results of Q4 for the UK are going to be watched very carefully by all. But predictions are that it will head into recession, with the Bank of England predicting that the UK economy will be shrinking until mid-2024, making it the longest recession since records began in the 1920s, with expectations that unemployment will double. And it doesn't get any better with inflation results, with for October, with 11.1% being the highest in 41 years. Unfortunately, the UK are not alone in this. They just seem to be further ahead. Fears are now becoming realizations that the EU will also be heading into recession, and the ECB has slowly started to acknowledge the likelihood of recession in the region. Speaking earlier this month, ECB President Christine Lagarde highlighted that the risk of recession has increased. As well documented, a combination of sanctions against the Kremlin and an abrupt end to the Russian gas imports and the need to provide financial support to households and firms struggling with the energy crisis has darkened the outlook for the bloc, which at the start of the year was predicted to grow more rapidly than the United States. Morgan Stanley have forecasted an annual contraction of 0.2% in the Eurozone for next year. Even if there are hopes that this recession may, by definition, be over within 2023 or even as early as 2024, the recovery is expected to be slow and weak, with high interest rates being cited as the main block in preventing the bloc from recovering quickly. And with the further increase to come as inflation, as it hasn't started to ease. In the EU, at least, anyway, because across the Atlantic, the somber mood has started to change slightly. After the latest US inflation figures showed a slight decrease in inflation in October, with further economic data providing evidence that inflation was easing up there. Now, the Fed so far have remained firm that they will not let up on the hyper-aggressive increasing of interest rates, with Fed Vice Chair Lael Brainard on Monday last week echoing weekend comments by Fed Governor Christophe Wallier that interest rates need to keep rising to battle inflation. But investors are closely monitoring this, as the risk appetite has definitely improved. This has also had a direct correlation with the recent weakening of the dollar against the euro, with the prediction that the euro-dollar rate could hit 1.05 by the end of the year. While most Western countries are trying to avoid recession one way or the other, China's forecasts are kind of unique. China has unexpected reopening after almost 3 years of COVID-19 curbs, is set to lead a recovery in its own economy and other emerging Asian markets, according to a recent Morgan Stanley report. China's economy was predicted to grow 5% in 2023, outpacing the average 3.7% growth expected for emerging markets, while the average growth in the group of 10 developed countries was forecasted at just 0.3%. With credit now completing more international business than ever, This variety of scenarios across the globe present multiple opportunities for us to grow our influence in different parts of the world. With none more evident than our New Zealand trade we mentioned at recent briefings, that has gone on to be one of our most successful deals we have done to date. With future trades already being discussed and planned out with the same originator, I am more than confident that Credit can find, create, and finance a deal anywhere in the world. Anyhow, in short, we're good at shipping in both an asset finance and trade finance transactions that are also shipping related. Moving to the market research from Seaborn, their weekly research reports, they summarize important events that will impact markets. And in their latest report, it talks of the oil supply to parts of Eastern Europe being via a section of the Druzhba pipeline having been suspended. There's no clear reason why or where this disruption came from, but it happened after an explosion in the village in eastern Poland near the Ukrainian border. The report also talks that the EU are to propose a natural gas price cap after the 24th of November, while the report also mentions that food prices are to increase and a recession in 2023 is looming, which is going to further back up my comments from earlier in the presentation. Further down in their report, they confirm our numbers from prior months regarding the world fleet, where both the Handysize and Panamax both have stocks more than 15% of vessels that are 20 years or older. That means that in the next 5 years or less, 15% of the world's fleet in these two vessel sizes will be out of the market. More importantly, the order books to replace these are off by 11 and 4% respectively. To put this into context, of the world fleet, the Handymax and Panamax make up more than 50% of the total cargo ships in the market. With both of them going to lose 15% in the next 5 years, and only half of that being replaced with new builds, the shipping market should be able to sustain stable returns based on the demands that we placed on this in the 10 to 15% reduction in supply. Which goes to confirm the figures mentioned earlier in both the Baltic Index and the FFA markets. So, as I said, we're good at shipping and trade and glad we made the decision to focus our efforts in these two markets. As this briefing is about October's trades, trading did increase to 19.44 million euro from last month's figure of 15.78 million. But it is yet to return to the highs of July and August with over 25 million euro each month. It's great to see trading is on the rise again, but as mentioned last month, we have shown we can do 25 million euro per month, so we must push ourselves to reach those levels once again. The exchange trading remains 3.810% ahead of all prior trading years when you compare it year-on-year performance, with our goal to keep that figure positive and try to increase it before the turn of the year. Looking at treasury performance, it was slightly less than 50% at 8.96 million euro. This is a slowdown in the improvement last month of 33%. We can do better, as previously shown, and we will push to reverse this swing. We like money being in the market, but we also like it to turn faster too. The credit index, though, increasing slightly to 76 for a month, has increased slightly to 76 for this month. For October, the ETR average duration figure increased from 70 days to 76, which is also the credit index. Great to see that we are still away from the 80s and in the same range it has been holding for some time. Again, the credit controls team is on it. As explained, the credit index has been holding fast at the 70s mark since April, and bar August's 86, it looks to be going back in the right direction. As explained at prior briefings, a stable credit index allows for better planning and management by the trade desk. As you all know, the credit index is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. The credit index is the cash-to-cash life cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash is returned. The credit index is one of our economic indicators that our market, meaning the one we're trading, is back to normal. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and also the top 10 rated holdings. The left side list will show what debtors, as we call them, or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as of the 31st of October 2022. And as usual, you can see the HSE remains an all but constant and is one of two sovereign risk entities for October, alongside Cork County Council, to make a total of three. Then we have Nestlé remaining for its seventh consecutive month, with a repeat of Balfour Beatty for the sixth time, who also had one of our largest trades for that month. Then we see Tarmac holding for a second successive month, with Fortis, Scanza Contain, and Breeden Trading all present as part of our mining cohort. A new entry to the list is Alastair Management, which was a transaction involving the shipping of grain from Romania to Belgium. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right-hand side, there's the regular appearance of Transport Supplies, Venus Wood, Balfour Beatty, and the return of Tarmac. These are the highest rated debtors, and apart from Nestle and Tarmac, as none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating, as of the 31st of October, this list shows a selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these lists shows a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and Community came in and fell substantially in October to just below 15%, which was a 5% decrease. This is just outside the range it has held for the year, between 16 to 19%. Wholesale and retail remain steady at the 25 to 26 mark, with food and beverage increasing to 9.65%. Manufacturing held steady at 11.40, while construction notably increased from 13.56 to 17.54%, which is indicative of the numerous mining organizations for national infrastructure products in the UK we are supporting. Looking at the performance section of the briefing, trading picked up more than 25%, and you'll see a continuing pattern in the trade for October 2021 versus October 2022, where volumes continue to be 13% lower year on year, but values remain up. That means for almost a year, our ETR are now coming in consistently higher in value than they were at the same time last year. As stated in other briefings, this makes sense when you consider who our debtors are and industry sectors we are now focusing on. We traded 149.31 million in 2021. And as you can see, we traded over 6 million higher in October this year, as at a total of 155.55 million euro to the end of October. The credit index of 76 is noted. And to finish on our performance in October, the largest single trade was a civil engineering infrastructure project at 2.67 million euro. As explained last month, for the past 3 years, the average value of an ETR has risen steadily, and now the average is around the 5,500 euro mark. And again, as stated last month, this doubling in the average value of an ETR is nothing significant really, and is more an indication that the volume to value ratio has been increasing with larger trades. As always, we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at almost 2.67 million euro. Finally, let's move to the trend section of the October briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price was quite erratic for this month. The line charts started at 2.044% and ended down at 2.072. This spread is 3 basis points and shows a consistent position of 2.05 and has been stable for the last 5 months. As mentioned, demand is lower than it should be and more funding is required. Bank deposit rates at between 0 and 0.5%, while investors are averaging 3% from investable in October. This then brings me nicely to the final item on the agenda, and once again, it's the new investable program from intermediaries and investors alike. October was the first full month of these new investable options. The initial uptake has been promising and varied across the three types, with the fixed one-year option at 3% being the most popular one so far. It is a good start, but we would be delighted if all three could push on further before the turn of the year. By now, you should have all received hard copies of the new brochure and application, so hopefully this can expedite the process and get investment levels back to where they were earlier this year. October was also the first month of the new incentivized commission scheme for yourselves, the intermediaries, with 1% paid up front on all new investments from now on. As mentioned previously, the date we aim to have this to you is by the 10th of each month, but if we can get it quicker, as we did this month, we will. We expect and hope this monthly payment will grow, and you can benefit along with your investor from these new options we are running with the negative yield to zero yield on bank deposits. The investors are now also being offered a yield that is between 2.5 and 3.750 better by buying Investable exchange traded receivables, rather than letting their cash languish unattended in the bank. And as stated, from next week, with the rates for the three versions of the product can be checked anytime on the investable.com website. I'd also like to confirm that this will be the last conference call we hold for 2022. As the world has to return to some state of normality, we once again will be running our annual investor lunch on the 16th of December, and this will take place instead of the conference call. You are all invited and should have received an invitation by now. If not, please contact myself or Ruby, and we will be more than delighted to add you or a representative to the lunch. We will issue a briefing document, but the lunch will be where we can discuss any results or changes, and hopefully over a glass of wine on the day. As this is the last formal briefing conference call for the year, I would like to personally thank you all for attending these calls throughout the year and putting up with myself and Patrick for 30 minutes each time. And also, a thank you from myself, Patrick and Ruby for once again the continued support shown to Investable throughout the year. To finish this briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA, revolving sale agreement of €80.59 million. And that concludes this month's briefing for October 2022. Thank you very much.